Having started the retreat now and focusing on meditation, yesterday bringing up the qualities of piti and sukha in terms of dealing with vedana as in meditation. One of the ways that is very striking, actually, when the Buddha talks about the sense of well-being and happiness that arises, in the mind, is from the relinquishing of hindrances, so that in terms of it isn't all just sort of technique. If I get my focus down, if I get my mind concentrated, if I get the mind to just stay still, then the mind will somehow experience well-being, rapture, pleasure. There needs to be an attentiveness to hindrances, and a relinquishing, a letting go of those hindrances, so that the attentiveness to and recognizing how they arise, if they're actually there, the first thing is to actually identify them. This is the hindrance of sensual desire. This is the hindrance of ill will. This is the hindrance of sloth and torpor. This actually is the hindrance of restlessness or doubt. And to be able to get a handle on it to that extent, because something that is unrecognized and unnamed is has a lot of power in the mind. The mind is influenced by it. And if we don't recognize it clearly and bring attention to it, understand, this is a hindrance, this is a nivarana, this is something that obstructs the well-being of the mind, then we quite happily trundle along in the path that the mind has set for itself, and it could be just stuck in a underlying kind of doubt or wavering or skepticism and uncertainty, or any of the other hindrances. That sort of informs the state of the mind. So really the first thing in dealing with the hindrances is to really scan the mind and to recognize more clearly what is the fundamental tone that is here. What is affecting me in this present moment? And then that gives you a much more clear path forward. A sense, okay, oh wow, yeah, there is some irritation there. That's ill will. That's there is aversion there, and whether it's directed outside or directed inward, it doesn't really matter. The content of it doesn't really matter. It's that sort of it's actually a hindrance, as much as it feels justified, or the mind has its rationale for it. It's sort of saying, "Oh no, that's actually a hindrance." And in the same vein, to similarly recognize more clearly when the hindrances are not there. Yeah, sitting right now. Right now I'm sitting, the breath is coming in, breath is going out. Mind is clear, spacious. It's not really attracted to anything in terms of sensuality or excitement or gratification. It's good enough. Irritation, okay. No, I'm not irritated. Mind's bright, not sleepy, not drowsy, yeah, not restless. This is content to be with the meditation right now. No doubting, I'm not really wavering or doubting about anything. So it's actually to really recognize, yeah, okay, well, that's the hindrances are in abeyance. And then to be able to delight in that and to recognize that oh yeah, that's a great bonus, that's a great plus. That's the Buddha puts a lot of emphasis on encouraging us to skillfully work with the hindrances and to be able to relinquish them, and that is for our well-being and happiness. And the images that the Buddha uses are quite vivid, in the sense like the sensual desire, that as long as one is still say engrossed in the hindrance of sensual desire, then the Buddha says it's as if one were a debtor, one were in debt. And because one's in debt, then one isn't, one has no freedom. And because, and one is even if one sort of has, makes a show of wealth, makes a show of material prosperity, there's always that niggling feeling in the back that I'm in debt, I've got to pay it back, or when is my creditor going to come in and take things back on me? So that there's a quality of inability to really be at ease. And in the opposite way, that when one is free from debt, having no debt, then there's this sense of happiness. And that is when one pays off the debt, when gets one's debts paid, there's this sense of lightness, burden. There isn't a burden on the mind, and I think most people here who've ever had credit cards probably know what it's like to both to have debts or to when you finally pay it off, and there's sort of this sense, oh wow. I think the only debt I ever had in my life or felt a responsibility for debt was casus reina. As a layperson, I never ever had any debt. That's not quite true, but I didn't. Student loans, that hardly counts. And never really thought of them. But the that sense of there's it. Having one has sort of mortgaged one's happiness to something else, and that's what we do in sensual desire. We forsake our own quality of well-being and inner contentment and peace, and then put it onto something else. We link it to something else. We make it dependent on something else. My happiness is dependent on getting that particular flavor, having that particular sensation, having that, getting that particular thing. And we lose our happiness that way. We lose our peace of mind. And so in meditation, to really start to look and investigate how we can not get trapped in that natural tendency of inclining to sensual desire and relinquishing, letting it go, coming back to inner contentment and well-being. And that's the, the Buddha gives that description of the happiness and well-being that the person who is free from debt is similar to the person who relinquishes sensual desire as a hindrance and is then able to be free. To that extent, anyway. Ill will is the Buddha depicts the one who is entangled in the hindrance of ill will as one who is ill, has an illness, one's sick, one has one can never quite enjoy one's food, enjoy one's sleep, enjoy one's company of the people around one because one has a fever or a headache or an illness that is making one completely out of sorts. And in the same way, that's when we harbor ill will, when we harbor aversion, that anger, then we've made ourselves sick. We've made ourselves ill, and that is it's not to our benefit. In the same way that we wouldn't go around and be testing different germs and different strains of disease just to sort of say, well, I had the experience. I wanted to see what it was like. One wouldn't be doing that. You say, no, I don't really want to know what it's like to have pneumonia. I don't really need it right now. And to have the same perspective with aversion, ill will. No, I really don't want to go there. It is truly upsetting. So that to relinquishing the hindrance of ill will. And the Buddha says that the happiness of relinquishing ill will is similar to the person who is when their illness goes away, when their fever breaks, there's this sense of happiness that arises. And one of the pops into my mind of just how good I felt one time. I had a scrub typhus one time, and it was about 10 days or so of fevers over 104, went up to 106 on days, and it was or a bit higher than that even. It was really quite extreme. And I was getting really worried that I was actually going to survive, that I'd end up without a brain. Everything seemed fried. And then it was after about 10 days or 2 weeks, and then I was in hospital, and the fever broke finally, and I could, and I hadn't slept for many days because the fever was so high. I was just sort of delirious, and I fell asleep. I was so happy, and I fell asleep. I rested, and then I woke up, and I had an IV in my arm, and it had jostled the needle while I was sleeping, and my arm was about this big because it was filled with water. All the IV fluid had just gone into my arm, and I looked at that and I don't care. The fever is gone. I'm so happy. I couldn't care. I couldn't care less. That'll go away eventually. Yeah, it's that feeling of happiness of a you know, the illness going away, knowing that was the end. You know, in the same sort of thing, when one relinquishes and sets aside ill will, just this sense of I don't care what they say. You know, I don't have to get caught in the aversion, the ill will. So that the happiness that comes to the mind is part of that piti and sukha, that one is both cultivating but also recognizing that it's a fruit of the practice, both the actual, say, one pointing and attentiveness to the meditation object, but also that relinquishing of the hindrances. I mean, that has to be a part of it. As I was saying before, it's just not bashing away at trying to make the mind stick on one point, but there needs to be that investigation going on. Okay, what are the hindrances and how to relinquish the hindrances? What is the nivarana, that which obstructs, say, the goodness of the mind? Drowsiness and sloth and torpor is another hindrance, and that the Buddha compares to a person who is in jail, and somebody's in jail, in prison. Then the sort of the world goes on in its own way, the person in prison isn't able to partake in that, isn't able to participate in the world around the sort of, and in the same way, when one's trapped in sloth and torpor, then, you know, there's this whole sort of world of possibilities around one, and one's unable to participate in it because of the sloth, the torpor, the dullness of mind, the sleepiness that sort of takes over, and one is collapsed in on that point of dullness. And then in the I think it's in the Visuddhimagga, sort of talking about sloth and torpor, when the monks are listening to the Buddha or the elder disciples, and discourse has been given, and the assembly breaks up, and the monks are gathering and talking and sort of saying, "Wow, that was such a wonderful discourse, and it wasn't great how the Sariputta described this or described that and this point he gave." And then the monk who was in sort of engrossed in sloth and torpor. I don't know what he said. I didn't hear anything. imprisoned in the sort of the dullness of mind. So and you know, in the same way that when somebody is released from prison, whether one is you know, whether it's for a short time or a long time, it's the, you know, prison is not designed to be a pleasant experience, but that release from prison is say the opportunity to live one's life freely again. And that in the same way with when the mind is breaks through sloth and torpor, because you feel that sometimes when you know there's like when dullness starts to set in, and then you sort of keep attending to it, keep bringing up energy, or keep bringing up sharpening the mind in various ways, finding it something that's going to work, and then when it does, then you just really feel this sense of spaciousness and brightness of the mind, the lightness of the mind, where it's really just so much more at ease, and there's this happiness that and satisfaction that's there. That, you know, one doesn't have to just be a kind of a helpless victim to the dullness of mind, but one can exercise some effort in that and control and dispel that kind of dullness, in the same way that, you know, it's like a, you know, when the weather changes, and we see it here a lot because of when the weather changes and the clouds are sort of blown away and dispelled, and this bright sky comes out, and it's a really a different feeling. I mean, cloudy, rainy skies have a certain charm to them as well, but there's a different feeling when the sky is bright and comes out, and this fresh sky comes out. So that, in the same way, in the mind, or our dullness may have a certain charm to it, a certain attraction to it, but it doesn't have the same quality of happiness and well-being that a clear, peaceful mind does. The restlessness and worry the Buddha compares to somebody who is a slave, and. And that, that's, you know, especially from the English language and from our own cultural perspective, you know, a slave is something, is really, is very, very strong language. And being in slavery, it does not bring up any connotations of well-being and happiness. And that restlessness is on a certain level, it's insidious how the mind is always just restlessly looking for something else to do other than attend to the present moment, attend to its well-being, attend to the cessation of suffering. It's sort of restlessly looking for more suffering to poke its nose into. Our mind is enslaved by that habit. So that to really see, you know, really seeing the harm, the lack of benefit in that kind of restlessness, and the Buddha, and this is where the Buddha encourages say that use of mindfulness of breathing is the primary condition that the Buddha gives for helping to alleviate the quality of restlessness, uttucca kukucca, And that, so that attending to the mindfulness of breathing in the ways that help to calm and to settle, relax, bring to tranquility the body and the mind. So they're really attending to that moving attention and energy through the body with the breathing, with the breath energy that really is relaxing and settling. And that is when restlessness starts to settle down and there's this sense of happiness that comes up in the mind because there's one is freeing oneself from slavery. And it's a very vivid image. And the happiness that arises from that is similarly, it is vivid. The last hindrance of doubt, skeptical doubt, is the image that the Buddha gives is somebody who is like a merchant who is traveling, especially in ancient times in India, traveling over a desert or a very remote area that is fraught with brigands and thieves and robbers and dangers. Reaching the destination and not having sort of lost the caravan, been attacked by robbers, been able to find enough feed and water for the animals in the caravan. And that's the sense of happiness and well-being that arises. It's similar to the being able to set aside that doubt, wavering, skepticism. Am I right? Am I doing it wrong? Is the method right? Is the Buddhism right? Is the teacher okay? Am I in the right place? All of those kind of worries and skepticism, doubt. Is this a true teaching? Am I, even if it's true, am I able to practice it? that kind of being able to set aside that skepticism, that doubt, and put one's attention back onto the practice of the training, going forward with the training, so that the happiness of setting aside that doubt and wavering is as if one had gone through these dangers, gone through this path of difficulty and reach one's goal. So so this happiness and well-being from that arises from the attenuating and bringing the hindrances into abeyance, undermining them. There's an inherent happiness and well-being that arises. So to attend to the hindrance in the sense of making it clear, is this a hindrance, is it not a hindrance? And then working with different ways of relinquishing hindrances so that there's giving oneself the opportunity to experience the sense of well-being and happiness, piti, sukha. That is a part of the process of practice and training, and this is a You know, it's a really a prime method or means of giving oneself the opportunity to experience that sense of well-being. To offer that for reflection this morning.